There was no collusion at all. No collusion.
Well, he was a lawyer for me for one of many. They always say the lawyer, and then they like to add the fixer. Well, I don't know if there's a fixer.
But Rudy knows it's a witch hunt. He started yesterday. He'll get his facts straight.
I understood Michael Cohen very well. It turned out he wasn't a very good lawyer, frankly.
Says who?
This is Josh Barrow, host of KCRW's Left, Right, and Center. You're listening to All the President's Lawyers, a special series from Left, Right, and Center. This show is all about President Trump's legal issues, which are complicated. They bring up good questions about free speech and defamation and Twitter and whether collusion and conspiracy are synonyms. It was clear we needed to devote some time each week and especially this week to answering some of these big legal questions. So usually I call Ken White, but Ken is off enjoying some time off with his family. So this week I'm joined by Renato Mariotti. Renato is a former federal prosecutor, and he's the host of the podcast On Topic with Renato Mariotti. Hi, Renato.
How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. This Wednesday, we had the back-to-back hearings with Robert Mueller testifying before the House Judiciary and Intelligence Committees, and by and large, Mueller stuck to his prior statements, which were that he would limit his testimony in person to what he had said in his written report. So even though Democrats wanted to know whether his report contained what he considered to be sufficient evidence to indict the president, if there had not been this long-standing Justice Department memo that says you can't indict a sitting president, and Republicans wanted to know about the Steele dossier and the origins of the FBI investigation into Russian links to Donald Trump's campaign, an investigation that had started long before Robert Mueller was even hired as the special counsel, Mueller wouldn't answer questions about those sorts of things. But there were a lot of questions that he did answer. Renato, I saw you on Twitter criticizing people who've been criticizing Robert Mueller. Some of these people have been saying that he was too cautious and restrained in his testimony today, that he didn't answer things, didn't say things that they wanted him to say. You disagree with that criticism?
Yeah, I mean, and I'm happy to go a little further than that. I'm really disappointed in those people. I think that it's just an opportunism now or a partisanship that they are trying to they're criticizing Mueller for not being a partisan, for not trying to achieve partisan goals. What we want out of a prosecutor, what the ideal of a prosecutor is, someone who has restraint, fair play, someone who's cautious and careful and precise. That is exactly what Robert Mueller was today in those hearings. He was getting beat up. Both sides were frustrated that he wasn't giving them what he wanted. In my mind, Robert Mueller was the winner today. You know, he kept his integrity. He stayed out of the political process. He did not try to make political points. He came off to me as somebody who is a fair-minded, careful prosecutor. And that I can't think of a better way for a prosecutor to conclude an investigation other than leaving that impression at the very end.
Well, so I think some of the frustration was not just about him not serving partisan goals, but him really sort of his formalistic approach to trying to figure out what is and is not his purview. And basically, I think what a lot of Democrats wanted to say was that his report was an implicit impeachment referral, and they wanted him to say that. They wanted him to say that while this was not the sort of behavior that he could charge for whatever reasons, that it was the sort of behavior that Congress might appropriately deal with. And there are some oblique references to that in the report. And I think Mueller's view was, you know, regardless of what his views are on that, that's an improper role for him to play as a prosecutor, even if he wouldn't be engaging in that in a partisan way, that it is a political decision, that it is a decision of the legislative branch. And I think some people feel like Robert Mueller was supposed to be kind of a moral authority here, and that it was appropriate for him to render an opinion on that that wouldn't have been a partisan opinion, but that would have been an opinion about the appropriate course of action for Congress to take.
Well, I will say Mueller, I think, is correct that impeachment, whether something is an impeachable offense, is an inherently political question, and it's one that's left to lawmakers by our Constitution. It's not, in my mind, something that a prosecutor should be opining on, really. And I understand that there was a prior statute, which there was that role there, but that wasn't his role here. So he had to make a decision and draw a line. Now, I could see if I was in his shoes, maybe drawing the line somewhere slightly differently. For example, one question and answer that I thought he didn't even throw a bone the Democrats' way is, you know, one of the Democrats walked through how he mentioned in his report that there is a constitutional remedy And then the Democrat said, and that's impeachment, correct? And he wouldn't even say that. And I think Mueller was concerned that there might be a soundbite that would be taken out of context that would suggest that he was calling for impeachment. And I think he rightfully wanted to stay outside of that. And I think Republicans have their own frustrations with him. But one thing he wants is that, you know, he presents the facts and the political branches make up their mind about impeachment.
Yes, that consciousness about soundbites seemed to be present throughout the day. Another thing that I think people were wondering in the morning is, why do Democrats on the committee keep reading sections of Mueller's report to Mueller and asking him to say whether that was in his report instead of doing what you might do in court, which would be to have the witness read the sections out of the report, which would have been a more powerful visual image? And the answer seemed to be, when a member finally asked Mueller to do that, that he refused, that he said, no, you can read that and I'll respond to it. So it seemed like Mueller was really trying to avoid saying things that could, even if they were things that were written in his own report that he stood by, he didn't want to say them in a way that would sort of allow them to be used as sound bites and part of the news cycle.
You know, the problem here was one of format, okay, for the members of the committee, particularly the Democrats. They had a lot of material they were trying to go through. They were essentially trying to present a case as to five instances of obstructive conduct. And they were trying to do that in 5-minute chunks where the answer and the question all had to fit within all those questions and answers had to fit within 5 minutes. They were interspersed between them were people talking about all sorts of random things that had nothing to do with it. And so they didn't have the time to walk the witness through that. And if I was in a courtroom, you know, I would put the report up on a slide, on a projector, and the jury would look at it. And then I would direct the witness to read certain passages and they would be clearly in front of him. Here, the Democrats, I think, in the Judiciary Committee in particular, were trying to get really into the weeds. We're trying to get him to repeat a lot of detail. And Mueller was not going to just speak off the cuff about that. He wanted to be precise in his words. So he's constantly shuffling through his notes, looking at the report, trying to get the precise words correctly. And that's just not conducive to getting through a lot of material in a short period of time.
There was one point where I think Mueller failed in that precision, at least one point, because part of the case that Democrats were trying to build there when talking about those instances of obstruction was that the president had done all the things that would be necessary for a prosecutor to bring an indictment against him, but that it was only because of this memo that says you can't indict a sitting president that Mueller chose not to indict him. They were really trying to get Mueller to say, or at least imply more strongly in the report, that the president would have been indicted if he were not the sitting president, and he generally avoided that, but he did give one answer to California Congressman Ted Lieu, where he seemed to say that the reason he had not indicted the president was the OLC memo. And there was a lot of reaction to that from Republicans and Democrats for a few hours. And then when we got to the afternoon hearing, which was in front of the House Intelligence Committee, Mueller walked that back and said that he meant to say the thing he said over and over again, which is that because of the OLC memo, he never reached a determination about whether the president had committed a crime, rather than saying that the OLC memo was the reason that he didn't indict him, that he never even figured out whether the president had done something indictable.
I think that that's fair. And I think, by the way, I hope that what you're talking about here in this discussion helps the people listening understand the difficult position that Mueller was in. Every word he said had to be precisely accurate, or else it would be picked apart by hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of people who are debating these issues on both sides. It could have potential ramifications that were serious. So if you saw the guy hesitating or not careful about answering or looking at his notes too long, you know, that's why. Now, as to this specific answer, I think there's a lot going on behind the scenes here, and I'll try to be very brief to explain what that is. Essentially, Mueller decided that because this policy was out there, the DOJ policy, that he didn't want to reach a conclusion about whether or not Trump committed a crime, because if he did so, that would be unfair to Trump, because ordinarily somebody who's accused of committing a crime has an opportunity to go to court and challenge that accusation. Here, if he just said in a report, yeah, I've concluded that Trump obstructed justice, Trump couldn't go to court. He couldn't challenge that conclusion. And so Mueller tried to stay away from that. One thing that's lurking in the background, though, is that Mueller did, as the Democrats tried to walk through, he did go through and show for each of the elements there was, quote, substantial, unquote, to use his exact word, evidence as to each one of those elements. And so you don't need to be even a lawyer to see that if there's substantial evidence for each one of the elements of a crime, then that crime has been committed. So, well, he was trying to be very careful and precise so that he could essentially keep up. It's almost like very careful legal wording where he's saying, look, I didn't reach the conclusion. You know, I didn't consider the issue because of the DOJ memo. I'm not saying that I would have indicted him necessarily, but, you know, yes, there's substantial evidence as all these counts in Congress. You can figure that out for yourselves.
Here's what I think non-lawyers find crazy about that, which is that all of us who have followed these proceedings closely have formed an opinion about whether Donald Trump engaged in indictable activity that could have been indicted if not for the memo that says that you can't indict the president. People have strong opinions that, now, not all the same opinions. A lot of people have strong opinions yes and strong opinions no. But people who have read the report, who have followed the news, even people who haven't read the report, they all have opinions about that. So how would Robert Mueller have avoided making a determination, even if he didn't intend to, as the person who wrote this report? You would think that even if he wasn't trying to, he would have formed an opinion about whether the president had engaged in indictable activity or not. And that's what I think people are a little incredulous when his answer is basically, you know, not, I'm not going to tell you whether I believe he committed indictable offenses, but that I never formed an opinion about whether he committed indictable offenses.
Well, I think that's a bit of a legal fiction. And in other words, what I think is, as a prosecutor, essentially what he's saying is, I mean, there's no question in my mind that Robert Mueller believes that he had sufficient evidence to prove that Trump obstructed justice. I don't think you can read volume two and not conclude that. But I think what he is saying is we never reached a step where we went through the rigorous process of kind of determining that we have that, you know, that we would have the evidence to charge and explaining that and so forth, because of the OLC opinion, the DOJ policy against indicting a sitting president. And so, yeah, it's a bit of a legal fiction, but he essentially is saying it would be unfair. So he's going to make the statement that he didn't go there.
To your point there about whether he had laid out all the evidence he needed, whether he had a strong case that you could indict the president, even if he doesn't want to say so, I thought the most interesting part of these two hearings came almost all the way at the end. It was during the House Intelligence Committee hearing. Sean Patrick Maloney, who's a Democratic congressman from New York, he wanted to know why Robert Mueller never subpoenaed the president to testify in the probe. And I thought that Mueller would refuse to answer a question like that, which is what I thought was the reason that nobody had asked the question all day. When people asked other questions that related to internal deliberations of the prosecutors, of the investigators, he tended to say that was the sort of thing that he couldn't answer. But he did answer this question about why he didn't subpoena the president. He said that they concluded that a legal fight over the subpoena would take a long time, the president would fight it very hard, and it would unduly prolong his investigation. But then Maloney responded to that, basically noting that at other times that Mueller's investigators had said that it was vital to talk to the president for the investigation. So doesn't that imply that it would have been worth the wait? Here's what happened when Representative Maloney pressed him about that.
Well, from what I can tell, sir, at one point it was vital, and then at another point it wasn't vital. And my question to you is, why did it stop being vital? And I can only think of three explanations. One is that somebody told you you couldn't do it, but nobody told you you couldn't subpoena the president. Is that right?
No, we understood we could subpoena the president.
Rosenstein didn't tell you. Whitaker didn't tell you. Barr didn't tell you you couldn't.
We could serve a subpoena.
So the only other explanation, well, there's two others, I guess. One, that you just flinched. That you had the opportunity to do it and you didn't do it. But sir, you don't strike me as the kind of guy who flinches.
I hope not.
Well, then the third explanation, I hope not too, sir. And the third explanation I can think of is that you didn't think you needed it. And in fact, what caught my eye was page 13 on volume 2, where you said, in fact, you had a substantial body of evidence. And you cite a bunch of cases there, don't you, about how you often have to prove intent to obstruct justice without an in-person interview. That's the kind of nature of it. And you use terms like a substantial body of evidence, significant evidence of the president's intent. So my question, sir, is, did you have sufficient evidence of the president's intent to obstruct justice? And is that why you didn't do the interview?
There's a balance. In other words, how much evidence you have to satisfy the last element against how much time are you willing to spend in the courts litigating.
So what do you make, Renato, of what Congressman Maloney was getting at there, basically contending that the choice not to subpoena the president was not a sign of weakness on Mueller's part, but quite possibly a sign of strength?
Yeah, I think there's something to that. In other words, if there was a mystery and the only evidence on a particular vital point would be coming from testimony from the president, it would present more of a need to push forward despite the cost, despite the resources, et cetera. I think at one point, I don't know if we have that clip, Mueller talked about the amount of time it would take challenging a subpoena. And I think,
yes.
Right. And so he He essentially was balancing, well, look, I'm already getting, there's certainly a lot of criticism. I think the Mueller team was paying close attention to the criticism of their investigation. There's a number of signs of that. And, there was already criticism of how long the investigation was. If he pressed forward with an interview, tried to compel an interview of the president, he said, I think he testified today that he expected Trump to challenge that. That would take a long time, probably take months, could take over a year. He didn't want to prolong the investigation for information that, he had largely been able to get elsewhere, particularly on obstruction of justice.
But so then are we able to infer from that that he had enough information or that he felt he had enough information to indict, which, again, is a thing that he is unwilling to say, because we know that it's possible for there to be little enough evidence that Mueller would say that there was insufficient evidence to establish a crime. He says that in volume one of the report. There was insufficient evidence to establish a criminal conspiracy between people associated with the Trump campaign and Russia. So if Mueller's case was kind of weak on the obstruction of justice stuff, and it wasn't worth trying to get the president to sit for an interview because there just wasn't that much to go on. Presumably, wouldn't he have said in volume two what he said in volume one, that there was insufficient evidence? And so the fact that he didn't push on, that it wasn't on the bubble where the interview would have really mattered, it seems like that's a good argument that Maloney is right, that actually it was on the strong side, that the reason he didn't need it was because he already had what he needed.
I think he certainly had a lot of statements from the president, many of which are cited as, from tweets and so forth. Trump said quite a bit about this case. We just heard some of the things he said in the intro to this program. I think I think Maloney is certainly onto something there. No question about it. And his questioning, by the way, was so smart. I was looking up who he was. I was very impressed with the questioning. I will say, though, I disagree with Mueller on the point, and it's clear that at least as to some counts in Volume 2, the evidence is weaker, and Mueller acknowledges that. I think, if I was bringing an indictment based on Mueller's Volume 2, I would probably put in three counts, and there's some that might bring five. But he walks through 10 different instances, and you could imagine questioning of Trump potentially improving that. And I don't think any prosecutor, if they really had the opportunity to question him in Mueller's shoes, wouldn't do that. I do think really what was going on here is the cost that he was talking about, the length of time that it would take to fight that, and the potential harm to the country, I think really were what was weighing on his mind.
Let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk about more news from Wednesday's Mueller hearings. You're listening to All the President's Lawyers. This is Josh Barrow, and I'm back with former federal prosecutor Renato Mariotti on All the President's Lawyers. Of course, it wasn't just Democrats on the committee who are frustrated with Volume 2 of the report, the part of the report that deals with claims about obstruction of justice. Republicans also didn't like this sort of equivocal language about the report neither implicates nor exonerates the president for an obstruction of justice crime. And you had a number of Republicans on the panel basically asking, well, what business is it of Robert Mueller's to talk about whether the president's been exonerated? Here's Republican Congressman Mike Turner.
Mr. Mueller, would you agree with me that the attorney general does not have the power to exonerate?
I'm going to pass on that.
Why?
Because it embroils us in a legal discussion, and I'm not prepared to do a legal discussion in that arena.
So do Republicans have a point here? Ordinarily, prosecutors are supposed to indict, or they're supposed to not say very much about why they didn't indict. This is what everyone got so mad about at James Comey about in July of 2016, not indicting Hillary Clinton and then giving this long statement about what Hillary had done that she was not going to be indicted for. What's the propriety of releasing this long report about the president's actions if he was not prepared to indict the president, indeed not even prepared to say that the president had done things he should be indicted for?
Yeah, I think they both had a point and were highly misleading. And I think in some instances were attempting to mislead and others not. And here's what I mean by that. You're absolutely right, Josh, that typically what happens is prosecutors either prosecute someone, either they bring charges, whether that's an indictment or otherwise, or they say nothing and they just close the case, right? And they move on to the next case. That is how our system is supposed to work. And in fact, the reason that we've been having this discussion earlier about, for example, why Mueller was unwilling to make certain statements is because it's perceived to be, our system generally is that it's unfair to someone to have a cloud hanging over them. Our system presumes, as some Republicans said, that someone is innocent unless not only are your charges brought, but they are convicted by a jury of their peers. So why is this case different? And why did I say that this was misleading? Well, Mueller, as Mueller pointed, tried to point out, although he was constantly cut off because of this 5-minute rule and members taking, you know, quote, taking back their time, unquote. This is a special case because you have the president of the United States who could not be indicted. And Mueller had to make a decision. He could have either done what I and many others would have done, which is just to say, OK, I can't indict this man, but there is sufficient evidence to do so. He was not. He thought that that was unfair for exactly the same type of reasons that I just referred to. In other words, it creates a cloud that he can't challenge. And so he decided, OK, I'm not going to reach a decision at all. The problem is by doing that and just doing that, he might leave the false impression that he lacked evidence, that he was making a public statement that would exonerate the person. And so here what he said was, I'm not reaching a conclusion one way or the other, but the fact that I'm not reaching a conclusion does not exonerate him. And I would say so if I could. And I think the last clause there, I would say so if I could, may... you know, I think there's some legitimate argument or criticism there, but I think on balance, this approach, if anything, is overly fair to President Trump, given the kind of the totality of the circumstances of how Trump tried to derail his investigation and the evidence of his guilt and so on, and the potential to bring him to justice in any other form other than through a impeachment inquiry.
So a number of Republicans on the panels made comments to the effect that once you had figured out that you couldn't indict the president, that should have been the end of the inquiry on the matters related to, you know, the behavior that was described that couldn't be indicted, that if you can't indict the president, what's the point of the investigation? And Mueller had some responses to that. He noted that the Office of Legal Counsel memo, the one that we talk about all the time, says you can't indict the president. It explicitly says you can investigate the president for a number of reasons, but partly because other people may be caught up in an investigation, and partly because a president can be indicted after he leaves office. And that's something that actually Republican member Ken Buck asked about.
Could you charge the president with a crime after he left office?
Yes.
You believe that he committed, you could charge the president of the United States with obstruction of justice after he left office?
Yes.
Ethically, under the ethical standards?
Well, I'm not certain because I haven't looked at the ethical standards, but the OLC opinion says that the prosecutor... While he cannot bring a charge against a sitting president, nonetheless, he can continue the investigation to see if there are any other persons who might be drawn into the conspiracy.
So this is one of several answers from Mueller that people were debating how to interpret. Did he just mean generically that presidents may be indicted after they leave office for crimes, or did he mean specifically that Donald Trump could be indicted for obstruction of justice, which would be not just that he'd be clear of the OLC memo, but that there would be sufficient evidence available to bring that indictment? Because that's, you know, that's sort of literally the question Buck asked. But, you know, most of the time when Mueller's asked this question, he demurs on it.
Well, he certainly meant the former. He also meant part of what you were saying by the latter. I was with you till you had an additional clause there that you added, which is he's saying that a sitting president can be indicted after he or she leaves office. And that's one reason why we conduct criminal investigations, first of all. Second of all, another point he was making is that Donald Trump, in fact, is not an exception to that rule. And after he leaves office, then there will have to be a consideration given by federal prosecutors at that time whether or not to bring charges against Donald Trump. But he was not saying, I have determined that I have sufficient evidence to do so. And this, again, like I said, I think all of us should feel a little bad for Robert Mueller. He's the precision in which he has to make these statements is insane.
Yeah, and I want to talk about one more line of questioning along this issue, and this is something that a lot of all the president's lawyers, listeners ask about when we do our mailbag shows, is about the president, the possibility that he could be indicted after he leaves office. A lot of the questions sort of assume that he loses re-election and he's out of office in 2021. Congressman Mike Quigley, who's a Democrat from Illinois, asked about what if he wins re-election.
What if a president serves beyond the statute of limitations?
I don't know the answer to that one.
Would it not indicate that if the statute of limitations on federal crimes such as this are 5 years, that a president who serves a second term is therefore under the policy above the law?
I'm not certain I would agree with the conclusion. I'm not certain that I can see
the
possibility that you suggest.
But the statute doesn't toll. Is that correct?
I don't know specifically.
It clearly doesn't.
Renato, can you explain the concept of tolling a statute of limitations?
Sure. Tolling a statute of limitations is essentially when a statute of limitations is paused for a particular period of time. So, for example, you could have a statute of limitations that will be 5 years. What a statute of limitations means is that that essentially cuts off the ability of prosecutors to prosecute a case. Sometimes there are exceptions that toll that. For example, if the wrongdoer has hidden certain aspects of their criminal activity, that can toll the statute for a period of time. So the concept that Congressman Quigley was mentioning here was essentially, well, could it be that the presidency, the term of the presidency, could essentially pause or the statute of limitations, so then the 5 years starts running once he leaves office? And Mueller, rightfully, I think, answered at first, I don't know. And I think that's the right answer because the issue's never come up. It's never been considered by a court. And who the heck knows what a court would do with that? I think that's the right answer. But I think Mueller, in the end, also, I think, is reflecting the fact when he was sort of saying, I think at a certain point at the end, he said, well, that's not – it couldn't be. And that's probably because – there's a notice issue to a defendant. If I was representing Trump or someone in that situation, what I would be arguing is how he could not possibly, you know that he could be prosecuted many years later in this tolling would take place.
So to give an example, like a statute of limitations might be told when someone is a fugitive, so the government can't find them in order to try them. But in this instance, we'd be talking about the president. These are actions the president undertook in 2017 and 2018 that could have conceivably been obstruction of justice. Could also apply to actions that the president took in 2016 related to those hush payments to Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal. So if the president didn't leave office until 2025, and that was more than 5 years after the criminal act, you'd basically have to make an argument that the statute of limitations didn't apply because the presidency was protecting him from indictment in the same way that being a fugitive would. But I guess your contention is you would have to have told the president while he's still in office about your intention to indict him later in order to create that notice?
Well, I just think nothing like that is clearly established in law. And there's an issue as to whether or not notice is given to people that if you commit a crime, you have liability many years later. And so, some have made this argument. Neil Katyal, the former acting solicitor general, made the argument on my podcast months ago as to essentially this tolling argument. But, I think that not only has no court ever gone this direction because they've never considered the issue, I think that there would be huge notice problems to someone. Typically, statute of limitations and exceptions and tolls, tolling of statute of limitations are either set forth clearly in a statute or they're due to some action or misconduct on the part of the person themselves. Here, being president is not itself misconduct. It just I haven't looked at the issue carefully. It would require a lot of legal research, but I think there'd certainly be arguments that Trump could make that he did not have sufficient notice. I would be surprised, frankly, if a court went that direction.
There's so much more to talk about, but I think that's a good place to leave it. Renato Mariotti is a former federal prosecutor and the host of the podcast On Topic with Renato Mariotti. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
We will have another Left, Right, and Center episode for you on Friday. There's already a lot to talk about. We will address the political implications of these hearings with Robert Mueller. We will talk about developments in the U.S. relationship with Iran. We'll talk about the Green New Deal. To get that episode, make sure you're subscribed to Left, Right, and Center on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have questions about the president and his lawyers and his legal issues, please send them to us. You can find us on Twitter at LRCKCRW and also on Facebook. All the President's Lawyers was produced by Rebecca Mooney. Our technical director today was Mario Saavedra. Todd M. Simon composed our theme music. I'm Josh Barrow. Thanks for joining us. And Ken and I will be back next week with more All the President's Lawyers.